everybody. Welcome to Beyond the Matrix. By now you know this is the show that dares you to get out of the box of conventional thinking and soar with the eagles in the free thought zone of open mind. And we're going to be doing that with eloquence tonight with my guest, who I'm going to have to ask him how I found him. I don't remember now. I think I read one of his excellent articles somewhere. And he agreed to come on the show. His name is Victor Vigiani. I'll be talking about him in just a minute. Before I get to that, I just want to remind you, I'm leaving for Peru on Saturday, so we've got some pre-taped shows for you on Thursdays while I'm gone. So it's kind of a arrivederci for my departure. I'm really looking forward to what I'm going to bring back to you from the mountaintop. Okay, back to more important things. My wonderful guest, his name is Victor Vigiani. He's currently the Director of Media Relations for Exopolitics in Toronto. His study of aerial phenomenon research and analysis of ET issues spans over 30 years. Now, you know this is a subject area that I keep going to. Whether it's extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional, this is... what do you call it? I don't want to say meat for my teeth because I'm a vegetarian, but this is definitely my field of passion. So he's got experience in UFO sightings. He's got experience about Area 51. We're going to let it all hang out tonight. And welcome, Victor Vigiani. Thank you for being with me, Victor.
Patricia, it's an absolute joy to be with you, and thank you for this opportunity to talk with you and your listeners about a subject that's a world-changing possibility for every single living being on the planet.
And boy, do we think we need that, or what?
Oh, God.
Well,
we are so damaged, Patricia, that we are in need of a lot. And I don't know what the beings from beyond can bring us, but it will definitely bring us a new opportunity to discover who we are as a species. And once we get our minds wrapped around the idea that we are part of a universe teeming with life, right now all the neoconservatives in the world and over the past 6 years, if not longer, have made sure that that type of discourse and dialogue does not occur in the public media or in the public places of academia and discourse, so that they pretty well got control over the mind thoughts of just about everybody in North America, and it's
yeah.
time for that kind of... restriction to be released. So I think that
talking about the fact that the Vatican did come out. I mean, this has been a subject that I keep bringing up on my show, but I'm pretty sure you can add to it with the Vatican coming out and saying it's okay to think about or to believe in ET now. They're all children of God. Big, big announcement, and I've been trying
Absolutely,
to make
yeah.
sure that people heard that.
Yeah, that's a necessary component of the way the strictures have been sort of loosened up a little bit. The Vatican, back in May 13th of this year, came forward. Father Gabriel Funes from he's the director of the Vatican Observatory in Tucson, Arizona, who spends a lot of his time there, plus his work right in Rome. He came forward with a very, very brave announcement that according to, Vatican philosophy, and I guess he represents that in a very concerted way, that it's okay for Catholics, it's not contravening any kind of dogma or articles of faith to believe in or think about or even active towards the understanding that we are part of a universe teeming with life, and that whoever is out there beyond our own species can be considered as part of the brotherhood of humanity too. So that is a major step forward. I would venture to say that if we could look at the United States government or even the Canadian government or even the Italian government coming forward with that kind of pronouncement, not necessarily saying that they're there, but to at least believe in them and be able to talk about it, that to me would be a massive step forward. And the Vatican definitely did take that step forward. And the only unfortunate part about it, Patricia, is that it didn't really get the airplay. It got a little bit, it did go front and center for a while, but then again, the media has a way of just sort of, loading these issues down with talk about Britney Spears or Paris Hilton or all that other garbage that people are force-fed
yeah.
In the contrived media.
But don't you think there's just a real possibility, I certainly do, that this was, we're getting it eked out to us as much as they think that we can handle at a time. And you know, that I really do feel so, it's under the skin here, that the contact is so imminent. It's just around the corner. Contact we've already got. I'm talking about global contact. And that it's time, and let's just say they, and we can allude to who they are in our minds. They have an agenda to eke this out and get us ready. I mean, look at Mars.
Of course,
they've now come out and said that there is water on Mars, and very few people have paid attention to that either.
Yeah. That type of, I guess, emerging leakage or desensitization of the general public is something that we in exopolitics, we look at that in a very kind of jaundiced way because of the control that the government and media have on this whole situation. And that type of, I guess, emerging knowledge, I think it's a control factor, it's a control tool, it's a control mechanism that certain, I guess, influential, I guess world order people may be putting in place to bring about it on their terms.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more, and this is definitely the theme of everything that I'm talking about on this show, we are definitely right in sync. And I'd like to just reintroduce you. Sometimes people get on just a few minutes late. So once again, we're talking with Victor Vigiani, the Director of Media Relations for Expo Politics Toronto. Are you going to tell us what Exopolitics, did I pronounce that right? Exopolitics,
yeah.
Yeah, what do you do there?
Well, it's two individuals, Michael Sala and Alfred Weber. They work independently, but they're two very close friends of mine. Alfred Weber wrote a book called Exopolitics. And basically, the idea of exopolitics has come, it was germinated out of the ashes of ufology. And if I could just sort of indicate to your listeners that there is a group, and many different groups, and very disparate groups of people who do UFO research. They catalog sightings, and they talk about the colors of the craft, how fast they move, how many they are, the shape they're in. And they have this sort of internal mechanisms of dialoguing and there's a lot of controversy within the UFO community about just what these things are. However, what exopolitics does, it goes beyond just typical conservative aspects of what ufology is, and we go beyond ufology and take it to the political level. And by that we mean that the UFO issue is a political issue. It's not a matter of just counting, you know, UFOs or where they come from, how fast they move, and all of that. We in exopolitics take it to the next level in trying to understand the geopolitical implications of being part of a universe that's teeming with life. I said that earlier. And the political positions that we would have to take, the policies, the public policies that we would have to put into place in order to understand that and purvey that type of information throughout the globe. And that ufology really hasn't done that. It's done a lot of great basic groundwork in researching what UFOs are, but we go the next step further and examine the aspects and the implications of contact and becoming part of the universal or intergalactic or interdimensional community system that's out there. Now, these extraterrestrial beings, they could be independent races, many of them, or they could be a federation or a group or factions within themselves. We just don't know about that. So what
right.
we try
Although
to do
we do have plenty of people reporting all kinds of information, and we'll be talking tonight about the abductee situation. You've got quite a lot of first-hand information about that.
Of course, yeah.
So we do have people representing different kinds of species and descriptions and whatever. But I agree with you that very little is being... First of all, let me preface this by saying one of the reasons why I'm thrilled to have you here is I know that regardless of the information that you bring forward, we've got an upward swing as far as your take on what this means for humankind. And I'm right with you on that.
That's the whole line,
you know, I repeatedly am talking about, quite honestly, without wanting to be drastic, something drastic has to occur for the human race now.
Yeah.
And what more drastic thing, like, as you said earlier, than to finally all out know that we are not alone in this incredible universe and that we are now looking at integrating ourselves into a community of hopefully more evolved civilizations than ours.
Let's hope, pray, of course, yeah. And that's all part of it. That's the whole reason why I'm involved in it. I guess this may come as a bit of a surprise to you and some of your listeners, but the only reason that personally that I'm involved in this, and my colleague Michael Bird, who is the director of Exopolitics Toronto with me, we consider ourselves social and political activists. We are doing everything in our power and within our own realm here in Toronto, within the Canadian scene, to bring about an international disclosure of this fact. And the one reason we're doing it, and it's going to sound a little trite, but we are suffering from so many integrated extinction behaviors, and I use that term to describe all of the things that we are doing on a global level. The cycle of war, the war economy cycle, it just never seems to end. The control of the media, the disproportionate distribution of wealth on the planet, the have and the have-nots, democracy.
The destruction of the ecosystems all around the globe.
The list goes on and on, Patricia.
Yeah.
And when you take a look at the people that are suffering as a result of that, and they definitely aren't you and I. I mean, we go through our day-to-day routines, we live our lives, and we encounter certain problems, but these problems are nothing like the little boy or the little girl in Brazil, or the little boy or little girl in Central Africa, who will never, ever see or taste a clean glass of water. And what my goal is, and that I don't want to sound too altruistic about it, but my goal is to bring about the kind of change that's necessary to make sure that all of those children, and being a former teacher, I can say this with a lot of pride, I want those children to have a clean glass of water and a better life and better access to education. And when you talk about intervention by extraterrestrials, well, how do you link the two? Well, if you look at the energy systems that these extraterrestrials use to move around the universe, these extraterrestrial civilizations have been experimenting with and have achieved the capacity to move at or above light speed. They can move at will throughout the universe or interdimensionally, however it happens. The kinds of energy that they used, that those crafts employ to move throughout the universe and throughout the stars, will totally and completely displace fossil fuels and eliminate oil as a commodity of exchange here on the planet. And in eliminating oil as a fossil fuel energy source will eliminate 99.9% of our problems. And that might very well be
why we've got no disclosure from the government, because they don't want us
you
to
got
stop.
It. Who's pushing the buttons on?
Because I'm sure the human race is very close, if not arriving
coming
up with alternatives ourselves.
That's right. So, you know, when you take a look at that kind of energy source, and that energy source, if you want to go into it, I can try to explain it from a physics point of view.
Yes, please do.
That energy, well, the energy source that we're talking about, Patricia, is very arcane. And just to give you an example of what that energy source is, and I'll start with saying that in quantum physics, they've found out, and this information is also being suppressed, that the energy that's linked into quantum physics is a very powerful source of energy that's achievable within the dark matter of space. And this energy source, and this is going to blow your mind when you hear this, one cup of this energy source could boil all of the oceans on the world for one day. Think about that for a second. The amount of energy in one cup of this, the energy sources that these beings use, and we know that in physics, in quantum physics, this is in fact true. There's so much energy out there, and it's not only a lot of energy, it's totally free.
Okay, wait a minute. So, we've got to backtrack here now. A cup of this, this is heavy stuff, Vic. A cup of this energy source. Can you explain, can you elaborate on this source?
Yeah, okay. The energy source is the way it works, and I'll try to explain it as clearly as I can. What quantum physics has proven is that there's a linkage between all bits of matter in the universe. And this linkage of bits of particles in the universe is the source of this energy. So I'll give you an example. What happens is that in in a particle accelerators, these big, huge circles. The Hadron in France just had an experiment with it. What they do is they accelerate particles of mass at or above the speed of light, or just at the speed of light, and they had them collide with one another. And then they split the particles in two. And then what they do is they apply a force to one of these particles so that it changes the direction of that particle as it's moving. So it changes, they independently split this particle in half. One half goes in one direction, the other half goes in another direction. And then they expose one of the halves to a different force that changes its trajectory. And automatically, the other particle that was split in half changes its trajectory without doing anything to it.
So it's kind of like an action-reaction situation.
That's right. And these two particles are somehow linked. And that's the energy source between those two particles is this source of energy. And these people are doing this on a microscopic level. So you're talking about a very, very small amount of energy. But when you take a look at this thing happening within the quantum vacuum of space on a minute-by-minute basis, the extraterrestrials who have achieved the understanding of this energy force use this type of energy on a continuous basis to move, and it's so powerful, and it's so all-consuming, and so controllable that one cup of this energy is so powerful that it could boil that much water for one day on the planet Earth. And it's not easy to get your mind around, because it's even more difficult to understand that aspect of physics than it is to say that there are extraterrestrials out there. So, you know, we've got a lot to learn about our position on the planet and what physics is really all about and who we are in the galaxy. So we are at such a primitive level of understanding science and physics that we have so much to learn. And that's why disclosure is so important, and perhaps that's why it's being suppressed so vigorously by the powers that be.
Now, you say that the extraterrestrials are using this energy now. Does this affirmation that you're stating come from information you've received in your work with people who have gone through abduction? How do you get to this source of information?
Well, the source of this, the information that I'm talking to you about is sort of the leading edge of quantum physics right now. And quantum physics is gradually becoming to understand this. This stuff was discovered back in between 1923 and 1926.
No, my question is, how do you know that the ETs are using this kind of energy to get around?
Right. The crashed vehicles that have been retrieved have been experimented upon, okay? And they have found out that the extraterrestrials, through the crashed vehicles examination, that they have these machines that they've back-engineered, that we are still trying to figure out, that these so-called, you know, propulsion systems that they have the capacity to warp space. In other words, they can bring parts of space towards them, and they use this energy to do that. And there is experimentation that's going on in Area 51 that has proven the fact that this energy source, this quantum vacuum of space, is responsible for this type of sort of gravity cancellation that these vehicles use in order to travel at or above the speed of light. So
this is very exciting, Victor, because my books the books that I've put out are called The Syrian Revelations, and this information about being able to alter the space and therefore propel the craft is part of the information that I'm giving out. So it's really nice to have this confirmed.
Oh, for sure. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Quantum physics will be literally exploding with this type of information, especially with the recent experiment in France just recently with the colliding particles that the Hadron particle accelerator went through just yesterday, and all kinds of, there are literally hundreds and thousands of researchers that are responsible for about seven or eight different experiments within this this collision that happened yesterday.
But are you talking about CERN in Switzerland?
That's correct. Yes, the France-Swiss border in CERN. There's a large particle accelerator about 100 meters below ground, and they conducted an experiment yesterday at 3 o'clock in the morning, I think it was. And the number of people that are gleaning information and gathering information about this is in the thousands of scientists. So we will soon hear about some of the results of that experiment, and it will definitely fall in line with some of the quantum vacuum ideas that were presented in 1923 to 1926. That this is not new information. Physicists have known this before for quite a while, but it yet to be confirmed completely. So we're well on the way to understanding what propulsion systems and energy sources the extraterrestrials use. Whether they use that capacity to move within the space and time from place to place, or whether they're sort of interdimensional in their origin, we don't know that yet. But there's a lot that we don't know. But the fact of the matter is they're not using fossil fuels to get here, and they're not using chemical fuels to get here. They're using the quantum vacuum of space in order to move around at or beyond the speed of light. And once you do that, once you move at or beyond the speed of light, all bets are off. We have no idea. We think we have some sort of idea about space and time beyond the speed of light, but we really have no idea what that really means and the capacity and the ability to do it. And what will that mean for energy sources here on the planet?
We're so in sync, Victor. It's a delight to hear you speak at the scientific level about, first of all, acknowledging that those skeptics that are on about this doesn't fit with physics. It's like, hello, physics are limited to what we know about the Earth. And it's time to get over this. Doesn't work with our laws of physics.
Yeah.
Our laws of physics are totally subjective.
Oh, totally. And it's been so repressed for so long. And you know what, Patricia? I think that the fact of the matter is, there's so many people who feel that the control organizations on the planet, be they the oil industry, be it the Rockefellers or the World Order people or the Bilderbergers.
Once, you're all the same. You're all talking about one group, aren't you?
Yeah, we don't even know the extent of their control. What I think humanity has to do and the general public has to understand is that we have to grow up and stop thinking about these damn organizations as our parents, as people, and include government in that too, as telling us what to do. We are in a position that we've been sort of the subject of control for so long that we take our lead from these parental organizations called government and media and other large, even the church to a certain degree. Although they may be coming out of the closet a little bit, but I still include the church. These control mechanisms are thought of among the general public as our parents. We draw leadership from them, and we follow them. It's time for us to grow up as a civilization and take this upon ourselves and take ownership of this issue and start talking about it in the media. And why is there absolutely no discussion about this in the media? Why? Does the media suppress any kind of overt information? It's not on the 11 o'clock news here in Canada, and I know it's not on CBC or CBS or NBC and then on the nightly news. Larry King talks about it, but...
Yeah, Larry King's been doing a good job lately of talking about it, but the answer, I think, to this rhetorical question is simply the media doesn't do too much talking about anything that requires too much intellect.
Oh, for sure. We've been dumbed down in a very concerted and orchestrated way.
Yeah.
And I think they've gone out of their way. Now, I've got sitting right in front of me here, and your listeners might be very interested in this. I do a lot of research in looking at the government documents that are available, and some of these things are absolutely dastardly. And if you take a look at either through the Freedom of Information Act or even go to the CIA website and look at CIA and then /UFO, you will come up with some very interesting documents. And I've got one sitting in front of me right now. It's from Edward Taus. And it was written in 1952, August the 1st. And he was the deputy assistant director of the special investigation unit of the CIA. And he was acting chief of weapons, equipment, and divisions. And he wrote a memo called Flying Saucers. And there's three or four paragraphs that talk about 1,000 to 2,000 sightings that have been reported, and reasonable credibility that these things could be unexplainable and so on. But that's not the important thing. What is important is this, and I'll read you the paragraph. And the paragraph 3 states, it is recommended that the CIA surveillance of this subject matter, in coordination with the proper authorities in the primary operational concern of the CIA interest or common, that it not reach the press in any public or credible way in view of their probable alarmist tendencies to accept such interest as confirmatory about the issue and unpublished facts of UFOs. So back in 52, there's a policy statement that says the CIA will control media and how media presents this information to the public. Now, how much more sophisticated can you get than that back in 52? What's going on right now? I mean, I can't even imagine how much control the CIA has over the media at this point. And it may not even be just the CIA either. It could be just the ownerships going on that are owned by big oil interests, because big oil interests have lots of money in the bank below the ground, and they don't want that money to evaporate with new energy.
Of course not.
So it's pretty revolutionary when you think about it. And it's not something that people think about on a day-to-day basis. You know, you go to work, you know, you come home, you put food on the table, you collect your paycheck, and you do exactly the same thing next week. You put gas in your car, you change your oil, you take your kids to the hockey game, and you come back and do the same thing next week again. So
until one day you wake up and the sky is full of thousands of crap.
That's right. And what's going to happen is all these people that are involved in this, Patricia, in this kind of non-ending carousel of non-events, when this kind of stuff does come out, be it a massive sighting of UFOs or some sort of contact or the release by government of some information, they're all going to become running to people like you and I and say, isn't this what you've been talking about? We're going to say, yeah, we've been talking about it for about 60 years now, but you haven't been paying attention.
Either that or the response will be, I knew it all along.
Right.
Which would be far out. Let's get on with knowing it and moving toward what we're going to do with this experience and knowledge when it happens.
Yeah,
and
I
think this is the most important thing for people to start considering, because a lot of people are obviously in fear. A lot of people are in ignorance. A lot of people are in fear. In the end, they're the same. What happens when the sky fills with craft?
You're asking me that?
Yeah. I mean, how do you anticipate this experience?
Well,
I'll give you mine if you would like a lead-in.
Okay. Sure.
I believe that this is going to occur globally, simultaneously. We're going to just have massive contact, because it's got to be massive. There can't be any more conjecture now. It's got to be everywhere. It's got to be Moscow and the States and God only knows where else, where people are looking up going, obviously, the media would have to be knocked out, because for the sheer fact of all that energy moving around, it would probably knock out our satellites.
Well, you know what? Let me go. And that was a good lead-in, because I do this as a touchstone probably once or twice a month. I sit down with I've got a PVR recorder that you can record movies with, and I recorded the old 1952 movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Okay, I'm sure. Have you seen that before?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, now it's been a favorite movie of mine. It's in black and white. It was well directed, well written, and I watched that movie. Now, simultaneously with that, I believe it's December the 12th of this year. There's the new movie coming out, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and I've seen the trailer of it, and it will be portrayed, I'm guessing, as something very, very different from the original movie. The original movie was very benevolent. This fellow came down, and he said, we see the Earth becoming very, very involved in weaponry and atomic nuclear things, and you are beginning to become a threat in the universe, and we can't let you do that, so you better change your ways. And he demonstrated it by turning all electricity off. So, the metaphor is very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, Patricia, what this new movie will be all about. Will it be the same kind of warning to humanity to clean up their act, or will it be another scaremongering movie like Independence Day, or like The War of the Worlds, which is called The New War of the Worlds? If Hollywood's involved in this, which I think they are, it will be the new scare tactic.
Of course, it'll be you're a mess for the universe, so we're going to blitzkrieg you.
That's right. So, in answer to your question, when you say, well, what do you think it's going to be like? Well, I think that people have been so imbued with fear that whenever these extraterrestrials do decide to come forward in the way that you're describing, which I think is a distinct possibility, the government will do everything that it can to create fear surrounding that type of contact by what we call false flag events. In other words, they will portray, government will do something or say something to indicate to humanity globally, because they can do it. They put the media contacts all in place right now, so they can do this throughout the world in a snap of fingers, that any type of showing or demonstration or disclosure or clear viewing of massive UFOs from other galaxies or wherever they come from will be considered by the government as a threat to our own independence. And I think the imperialist notion that they're coming here to conquer us will be something that the government will try to fixate on and convince people with the fear, the same thing as the terrorists.
We've got the war against drugs, the war against terrorists. Now we've got the ultimate terrorists, the alien invaders.
Yeah, and I'll tell you another story which proves the fact of what I'm talking about. And I'm not sure exactly how much time we have left, but I think it's very important for your listeners to hear this story. And I'll tell it because I do a radio program up here in Toronto on the Richard Serrett Show, and we're having a very important guest on. Her name is Carol Rosin, and she's the director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space in British Columbia, Canada. And Carol Rosin was an individual. First of all, she's a disclosure witness that came forward with Stephen Greer back in 2001. That's number one thing. But back before, long before that, in the early part of the 1970s, she was the assistant to Wernher von Braun. Okay, and she was assisted him in his work in terms of publications, and more or less like a press secretary or whatever for Wernher von Braun. We all know who Wernher von Braun was. He was the father of rocketry, who was brought over to the United States after the Second World War to help out and develop, different kinds of spacecraft that, as a resulting in the shuttlecraft today and the lunar module and all of that. Anyways, Wernher von Braun was on his deathbed, and he was very, very sick towards the end of his life, and he told Carol Rosin, they were very close, he said, "Carol, I want you to listen to me. I know that there is a scenario in place where we will be putting weapons in space, and what we will be doing is putting these weapons in space to, first of all, go through a series of threats. Number one threat will be the Soviet Union, the communism. We have to make sure that we can knock out any ICBMs with our space weapons. The next one will be rogue nations, so that these rogue nations that get nuclear weapons and begin to learn how to fire these missiles off, they will be the second threat. So we have to learn, and we will be told to fear them. And then, eventually, there will be another threat, and they will be a terrorist threat, a universal... And this is back in 72 now, Patricia. This is not recent. This is 72.
Now, I was just going to ask you, what was the timing on this?
Yeah, this is way, way back before we even heard what a terrorist was. And then, eventually, he said the next one, the next place that fear will be injected into the public will be asteroids. There will be media presentations about these asteroids coming towards the planet, so we have to have these weapons in space to knock apart these asteroids so they won't hit the planet and destroy us.
Right.
And then the final card will be the extraterrestrial card. The government will come forward to say we need weapons in space to fight off extraterrestrials.
Well, this is just push goes to shove here on the fact that, okay, then we must be at the final point because we've already had all the other scenarios, including the asteroid.
That's right. He called it. The fact of the matter is, he called it. He predicted it. Well, not because he predicted it. He knew that his position within NASA at the time, the fledgling organization called NASA, he knew that this is what they were doing. This is why they were putting weapons in space, so that they could develop the fear among the public, so that the public would admit to or concede to or accept the fact that we need weapons in space. And that's why things are up there right now. And be guaranteed, when people say, well, there's no weapon, there is definitely exotic weaponry, scalar weapons. And now we're getting into 9/11 and all that other kind of stuff, which I don't really, because I'm not an expert at that, but we have some very, very sophisticated weapons in space. And when the extraterrestrial card is played, that will justify why these weapons are in space.
But don't you think that it's possible that these beings will be evolved enough to be able to knock out these weapons?
Well,
without call me the ultimate optimist.
Yeah. Oh no, you are. No, you're very correct. The weapons that we're trying to develop and doing this are basically bows and arrows compared to what any extraterrestrial would have. And they don't. Our in exopolitics, our take on who these extraterrestrial beings is, and many disagree with us on this fact, Patricia, that we feel that these beings, these civilizations as a group or even individually, are benevolent. Now, that's a hard pill to swallow. And one of the reasons we believe that is because these beings have been around a long, long time in our history. And we're talking thousands of years, not just the Roswell coming here. They've been here a long, long time. And they've been monitoring us and watching, and it's like helping in very indirect ways, for sure, and some not so indirect, and some very direct ways that we could get into in a few moments in terms of abductees. But we feel that this galactic community out there is a benevolent organization. Now, we're not saying that they're perfect; that we don't know any of that. But the sheer fact that they have not come down and had us for dinner, so to speak, is we feel that that's a very important part of how they want to relate to us. They can come down.
I have Stanton Freeman. I'm sure you know him.
Of course,
you know Stanton Freeman. Okay,
yeah,
I've had him
on
about three times. I just love him having him on the show. And he said,
if
we could just stop shooting at them.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like, you know, it's like a minnow trying to spit at a Navy destroyer. You know, it's just not gonna, you know, it's not gonna make any difference to their perception of who we are. They know that we're a primitive race, but they also know that we are an evolving, complex race. That they know that we have a corporeal existence in our bodies and as a corporeal being, as a material being, but they also know that we have a very alive and developing consciousness. They know that we have a spirituality component to our being, and I think these are all things that they're in touch with too. So now we're getting to the metaphysical questions of who we are and how we're related to them. So there's those questions that we've got to deal with. How are we related? Now, we're not related in terms of, you know, the familial, but even in our DNA, how are we related to them as beings? So all of these questions have to be answered. And right now, Patricia, they're not being talked about. There's no newscast or academic institution that's talking about these kinds of things.
No, but there are alternative people like me, like you, talking about the DNA. Let's go back to the Egyptians. We've got Osiris popping out of the stars. We've got Ptah, who was actually described as one who leapt from the blue. And we've got witness all over history of involvement with beings from beyond this planet. And
Without a doubt, it goes so far beyond.
So it's not only abductees talking about potentially beneficial or harmonious interaction with them, but we've got all over our history where there's been intervention to assist humankind take those leaps.
Yeah.
And no question that we need a leap right now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that leap, we have to be very careful with that leap because right now I'm beginning to believe that we're getting ready, but I'm not willing to completely concede that we are, in fact, ready. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I guess what I'm saying is that the human consciousness is so complex, and I think that we have so much room to expand and the potential to really assume the extra terrestrial position or the mindset, but because of our cycle of war, the war economy that we're engaged in, and the cycle of fear that our governments are exposing us to, I think the extraterrestrials, Patricia, are waiting for us. They're waiting for us to turn the corner globally to kind of come to some kind of consensus about who we are as a species, and as humanity. And once we turn that corner, I think they're going to be here at the drop of a hat, because they'll see that we're on the cusp of being ready. So I don't know, that's just a feeling I have. I'm not sure about that. I can't say that for a fact. But I think that we are sort of, pre-light speed civilization, are approaching, turning the corner on understanding that we're part of this galactic community. And I think that once this kind of information that their program and our radio show with Richard Serrett, once these kinds of, you know, tendrils of information reach out at humanity, that will begin to turn that corner. And once we turn the corner, I think we will be prepared. And I'm hoping maybe the other side of the coin might happen. Maybe they might interject and say, okay, you know what, we're ready, and here's a mass showing, like you were alluding to earlier. I mean, that's a possibility too. We just don't know what's going to happen.
We don't. I mean, there's also the possibility that we are at such a brink of destruction now that they may just say, okay, no, we can't wait for you guys to get your shit together. We're coming in.
We're coming in and we're going to say, look at guys, you know, get a, you know, we're going to stop the fighting in the sandbox, put the toys down, put
exactly.
the guns down, and just look each other in the eye and say, look at, there's a whole galaxy, there's a whole universe out there to explore. You don't have to kill each other on a daily basis. You don't have to use money as exchange. You don't have to burn fossil fuels. You don't have to eliminate the foliage that's keeping your planet alive the living, breathing planet. You're destroying, you're suffocating yourselves. So, and I think one of the reasons why I say that is, I alluded to it earlier, Patricia, but extinction behaviors. We can list our extinction behaviors. I think we've done a pretty good job of doing that. And if we continue with these behaviors, we are going to become extinct. Fact of the matter.
Sooner than later.
Yeah, it could be. Exactly right. I mean, right now, all we need is some sort of, nuclear exchange, and we're toast in more ways than one. You know, so I think it's important.
Yeah, people are still convinced that we can have a little minor. I think the governments were talking about a minor nuke, less harmful nuke. It's like all we need is that kind of energy exploding in this fragile atmosphere.
I had an interview
with someone whose name, unfortunately, I can't remember at the moment, who said, Patricia, it's like we've got this light switch. And he said any little thing can set it off, and just it's like the flick of a light switch when the atmosphere just finally disintegrates.
That's right. Exactly, and it'll come like a change in an instant or overnight. And I don't think, and I guess you have to sort of look at who these extraterrestrials might be in terms of their own enlightenment. My sense is, and this is just intuition speaking, I know facts to back this up, but I think if you look at who these enlightened beings are, and when you have the capacity as enlightened beings, if you've been around for 3 to 4 billion years more than we've been around, you begin to understand consciousness, spirituality, and the connectivity of every living person in the universe. You begin to understand that, and you begin to understand that when you see a place like Earth struggling the way it is, you say, well, let's just see if they can get their act together by themselves, and then we'll intervene. They have to have some form of enlightenment to have gotten to where they are right now. They would have had to eliminate their own extinction behaviors, and the fact is that because they've been around for 3 to 4, maybe even 5 billion years more than we have, the fact is they've eliminated their extinction behaviors because they've been around for that much longer. So they do not engage in extinction behaviors. What are the extinction behaviors? Well, look around you. Money exchange, fossil fuels, a constant war cycle, they've eliminated those behaviors, which has not made them extinct. So that gives them a strong leg up on us, and it allows us to understand that they just may have some insights that we could benefit from.
Do you have any really exciting information that you've in your interaction with people who have had abduction experiences that you'd like to share with us?
Oh my goodness, that's worth another hour.
It's a whole other show, right?
Yeah, well, it is, but I can definitely. And I don't want to sound dramatic about it, Patricia, but I've sort of put this work aside for a while because I've become very uncomfortable with the whole abductee phenomenon for a lot of different reasons. Because I guess basically because of my incapacity to deal with what's really going on. When I first started doing this work, probably in the late '80s, when I began. I visited John Mack twice, and I visited him in his Harvard office just after he was going through all of that the accusations within Harvard University. And I visited him a couple of times. And as a principal of elementary schools, I ran into two situations of children shared with me because they knew I talked about it sort of flippantly, among children. The word got around that I was interested in this whole UFO phenomenon back at the time. But then I had two children disclose to me that they had been taken, okay? And they came to me. I didn't go to them. They
How old were they?
One was grade 6, so that would be probably 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was grade I think it was grade one or grade two, and he must have been, what, seven or eight, okay? And independently, they didn't know each other, but they came independently, and they both described situations to me. And the circumstances about how they talked to me about this was totally accidental and totally inadvertent. It wasn't something that I tried to get out of them. The situation came about that the information just flowed from them. Mm-hmm. One little boy, Peter, I'll call him as a name, he was a problem child in the school in grade one, and he would come in every single day late with no lunch and being dumped off at the school doors by a single parent who really didn't know exactly what's going on, and we tried to work with the family, so on and so forth. And he had all kinds of behavior problems. And one day he came into the school, and he was about a half hour late, and he looked absolutely just disheveled. His hair was messed up, and his shirt was on backwards, and he was not crying, but you could tell he was in a really bad state. So, and I just happened to be at the door at the time, so I said, you know, Peter, come on and we'll sit and we'll talk. What's wrong? And he was sort of very depressed, and I sat him down in the office. I said, it looks like you didn't get any sleep at all. You look like you haven't slept for a week. And he was pretty articulate, this little guy. And I said, what's wrong? And he looked at me, he stopped, he's sitting in the chair, you know, his feet dangling on the chair, and he looked at me and he said, they came back last night. So I'm sitting in my chair, principal of the school, and I said, and I what do I say? You know, do I get into a therapy session with this kid? You know, I said, what do you mean they came back? And he said, the monsters. And I said, monsters. Okay, well, do you want to tell me about it? And I said, that's the least I could do, or the most that I could do. I didn't want to lead him. Who are these monsters? He said, well, they come in the window and they go under my bed. Oh. I said, well, what do you see out the window? He said, it's a bright orange light, and something comes through the window and they come to my bed, and they stand around my bed. I said, how many? And so I'm shaking at this point. You know, my skin is crawling. I'm shaking, and I don't know whether to go on with this kid or to shut him up. So, and he goes on to describe basically an abduction experience. Now, he did not tell me that he was taken somewhere. He did not say that at all. You know, but he definitely went through the typical initial stages of a UFO abduction experience. Whether you see a light out the window. The thing moves through a solid wall or a window. These creatures, they stand around your bed, they stare at you, and they frighten you. And this is, you know, 7 or 8 years
old. I'm getting a creepy crawly.
Well, and I could talk to you about the other individual child who had a totally different story, in a different way, but, like, how do you dismiss that kind of information? You just don't say, well, the kid saw it in a cartoon, or had a bad dream. When you put it in the context of other abductees that I've dealt with, or experiencers, as John Mack calls them, you see the patterns evolving. You see something happening. And the children, when it gets to this kind of stuff, and these children are in a bad state, you know, they're not well taken care of, and they're very stressed. They don't lie. They don't fabricate. They don't confabulate. They tell you like it is. So I have absolutely no reason to doubt that little Peter went through something very akin to, if not exactly akin to, an abduction experience. So, and I bet my life on it. I bet my life on it. So, and then other adults that I've spoken to and worked with, about 12 individuals, and each one of them, both men and women, have told me stories that they don't want to make public. They don't want to talk to anybody else about it. They're just trying to sort it out at the time. They just want to try to make sense of it. And some of the things about actually being taken, about being brought onto a craft, being sitting in a room with other people in pajamas, being taken and put on tables, being forced to have sex with other types of individuals, either humans or people that were apparently extraterrestrial.
Let me interrupt you right here and ask you this, because we're kind of getting to the end of our time.
Yep. Sure,
How are we going to tell people that this could be a benevolent experience?
Well, you know what? That's the whole contradictory part of this whole crazy field. what seems to be happening, and this is just my take on it, is that for whatever reason, eventually these abductees are taken against their will, granted, yes, but then they are eventually brought to a point where they begin to understand what's happening to them. And this may not be a pleasant way to view who these extraterrestrials are. And it's not just, we can't pin this on any one race, but we seem to think the grays are responsible for this. Very, very few reports have come forward where there's other types of ET beings that are doing this kind of thing. It seems to be the grays that have this kind of maneuver in their back pocket. So perhaps the grays are responsible for sort of a breeding experiment or some sort of investigatory experiment with the human race that's not altogether all that great. And we've yet to find out the real answers to why the hell these people are doing this. And I guess when it all comes down the pipe, we're going to have to demand some very specific answers from the gray race, whoever they happen to be. It's, you know, come on, come forward. Why are you doing this?
And you know what they might answer? Why are you doing the same thing to your animal?
Exactly. Yeah. That's all part of it, too. You know.
I mean, when we look at this phenomenon and we feel victimized by it, let us look into ourselves and see what we are doing to our animals, which is much more violent than being made to lie down on a table and be probed and have
of
sex
course,
with
of course,
another
yeah.
being. I mean, we're doing just horrific things in these laboratories.
Sure.
And this is in some way a very backhanded way to get a very vital education about human behavior.
Yeah. And the other side of that, too, Patricia, is not just what we're doing to our animals, what we're doing to ourselves. We're abducting people's minds in the media every day. If you think about the kind of mind control that's going on, the real strict mind control process that's being foisted upon us by the dark intelligence agencies throughout the planet.
It's never been as bad as it is now. At least it's not as overt.
You know? Yeah. You know, when you take a look, just for example, I mean, you take a look at what's going on in the news media. You know, you take a look at why Brad Pitt gets mad at Angie sometimes. I'm saying that right now because I've got it up on my computer screen. Lindsay Lohan. I mean, I don't even know who this lady is, but she captures the imagination of millions of people. I mean,
right, because it prevents them from having to think about the real issues in this planet.
Exactly. So we are being fed this mind-numbing information constantly. It doesn't matter what it is, but at the price of oil, or you know, why Britney Spears can't get custody of her kids, or why Matt Damon is lashing out at Sarah Paulson for whatever. I mean, it's just a cycle carousel of issues that people flock to and believe that this is reality. And this is not reality. The reality is that we are in big, big trouble, and that we have to reach inside of us to understand that the human community has to come together to understand that we have to look outwards and inwards in order to understand who we are and stop playing this media game, this carousel game of cat and mouse with these false issues. So, it's such a complex issue, Patricia, that...
It is, and unfortunately we're out of time now, but you're going to have to come back on because we are just basically just scratching the surface here, and I'm sure we have so much more to share.
Oh, there's just so much more that I'd love to talk about because it's such a passion for me, and I'd like to tell your listeners that there are about 14 or 15 right now emerging exopolitical organizations whose leaders and whose directors feel exactly the same way as I do. And these we're talking Germany, we're talking Italy, we're talking Switzerland, we're talking Denmark, we're talking the United States, we're talking Canada. So this thing is emerging as a hotbed of this kind of talk about what the extraterrestrial presence means to the planet. So,
put me on your list.
Well, I will, yeah, for
okay.
sure.
And let's tell everybody again, the name is Victor Vigiani, a true visionary on the times we're going through. How can people get in touch with you and read up more about what you're doing, Victor?
Well, they can go to
website?
Our website. Yeah, the website, www.exopoliticstoronto.com. All one word, exopolitics.
And the radio show is the Richard Siret Show on CFRB.
That's right.
Radio CFRB. In Toronto.
That's right, CFRB.com. They can listen to it the first Wednesday and the third Wednesday of every month at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. And we're going to have some fascinating guests on. Next week we've got, who do we have on next week? I believe we have Terry Hansen, who's a media expert in all of this. And we're going to have Paula Harris on, and hopefully we can get a hold of Jesse Marcel. So we consistently provide an educational process for people to listen to and sort of be plugged into the many different ways this whole issue is moving throughout the human consciousness.
Fabulous. We've got to also talk about crop circles, where I spend a lot of my life, communication from the interdimensional level,
sure,
which is my passion. So
you
will definitely be back?
Oh, without a doubt. I've loved our exchange. I truly believe that what you said earlier, that we're both in sync on this, is it's a great benefit to have two people who are of like minds, thrash out the issue and really clarify things for people. That's what my job is. I'm a teacher and educational administrator by career, and I'd love to clarify issues with people and explore things so that they can understand what's really important in their own lives. So
that's what my job
like
is too, Victor. So we are definitely partners in this, and I just have to thank you over and over again for coming on. And as soon as we hang up, we'll have to fix a new date for you to come back, because we've got a lot more to share. For now, I'm saying goodbye. I keep saying good night because I'm in Rome here, and you're in the States. Oh, you're in Canada, and it's not night yet. So it's got to be goodbye for the moment. But again, thank you so much. You're a true visionary of our time.
Well,
all right, everybody, that's it. I'm off to Peru. The shows will go on, so please stay tuned. Tell your friends. Beyond the Matrix is the place where you can soar out of the box of convention and get to the source of some really important information with visionaries like Victor Vigiani, who is doing excellent work on this planet, trying to get people to open their minds and fly into the free thought zone. This is Patricia Corey. Thank you for being with me. I'll be in touch soon. I'll be thinking of you, watching the skies over the Andes to see what kind of craft I can pick up. Thank you. Be good. Stay tuned in on Thursdays to Beyond the Matrix. Bye-bye for now.